Every moment that has happened, is happening, and will happen are all there concurrently. Again, it's ever present. And each of those moments are like a photograph, all stacked on top of each other in this great giant stack. Well, every once in a while, since everything is energy, frequency, resonance, vibration, every once in a while, two of those moments will resonate at the same frequency for just a moment. And we will get what we call a time slip, where one moment in time can see the other. We're actually getting a glimpse of another point in time where we can look into the past, and the past is looking into the future.
Mike Rixucker, welcome to Passion Harvest. I'm really excited to have you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Louisa. I'm really happy to be here, and I appreciate you having me today.
This is one of my favorite subjects, time, and a big congratulations on your book, Travels Through Time, Inside the Fourth Dimension, Time Travel and Stacked Time Theory. I guess I'd love to start. In the concepts of time for the audience, what is time?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question because time doesn't really exist. It's something that we as humans have devised to really explain our reality. So we use it to keep track of the seasons, when to plant the crops, when to show up at work so supervisors don't get upset at us, that sort of thing. But time itself, it really doesn't exist. It's our existence here in the fourth dimension, which is where our consciousness resides, is in the fourth dimension. And so when we look at what we call time, we have this analogy, the river of time, which is a nice analogy. And the time is actually the water in this river, but it's not the water itself that's making that river flow. It's the banks that are holding that water, that time in place. Now, if we were to remove those banks, all that water, all that time would spill out and just be stagnant. It wouldn't be moving. It would be like this giant lake, and we could move about in it as we wish. Another way to look at that is take a small town that we may be driving through. Maybe speed limit's 35 miles per hour. That's the speed that we're driving through it. Just a couple of houses, a church, gas station, little store, that sort of thing. And maybe it takes us about 10 minutes to drive through this town. So we have a time relationship with the town and the objects within it. Now, let's say instead we're going over that town in an airplane and we're able to see all of those buildings all at once. The little store, the houses, etc. It's all there at one time. And so now instead of having a time relationship re with it, we have a relationship with it in space, a spatial relationship. And so this is what time really is that it is everything as a whole. And I mentioned before that we are really in the fourth dimension, our consciousness, but there are up to 11 hyperspatial dimensions according to our theoretical physics. So everything above that fifth, sixth, seventh dimension would have complete access to everything that is in the fourth dimension, or have complete access to what we call time.
I mean, I just love this subject. It's such a hard concept to grasp in our humanness. So, from birth to death, whatever time frame that may be, there is only now, there is no time.
That's one way to look at it, is everything is one consistent present. And in fact, Socrates got into the idea of what exactly is the now, what is time? It is this ever persistent present. We are not in the past, we are not in the future, we are right here, right now. So the Greek philosophers battled this and debated this, he, Aristotle, etc. When you get into their different concepts of what time is, you can see the kind of gears grinding as they're trying to really figure it out. So I have a theory that I've called stacked time theory. And in a lot of ways, it's very much related to Einstein's idea of the block universe, which I came to my concepts independently. And then when I did my own research, I'm like, oh, Einstein has some similar ideas. So, in this, you take where you're sitting right now. Every moment that has happened, is happening, and will happen are all there concurrently. Again, it's ever present. And each of those moments are like a photograph, all stacked on top of each other in this great giant stack. Well, every once in a while, since everything is energy, frequency, resonance, vibration, every once in a while, two of those moments will resonate at the same frequency for just a moment. And we will get what we call a time slip, where one moment in time can see the other. And sometimes we relate it to something like a ghost or a haunting or something like that, but we're actually getting a glimpse of another point in time where we can look into the past and the past is looking into the future, or vice versa.
Fascinating, fascinating. I mean, I think Einstein talked about, it's almost like we're looking, you know, we can look at our life at a point in space and time, it's already there. I guess my question is, the past has already occurred from what we remember of it or our memories. Has the future already occurred?
It has. So it's all there. It's, again, all ever-present. Now, it doesn't mean that the free will doesn't exist, or, you know, we're kind of trapped, because there is this idea of the future influencing the present, or the future influencing the past, where moments that for us aren't going to play out until somewhere down the road are actually, again, because it's all right here, are able to influence our existence now or our existence previously. And I'll give an example of this. So my fiance Jennifer and I, we've known each other since we were in the first grade at about 6 years old. We didn't start dating back then and have been together ever since. So we just kind of came back together here over the past year and a half. But we had this incident in first grade when we were in the library. We really hadn't had much interaction up to that point. And all of a sudden, one day, as I'm just looking through a stack of books and trying to find a good book to read, she just suddenly plants a kiss, smack, right on my cheek. I'm like, whoa, what was that? You know, I'm blushing and I'm all embarrassed and everything. And that was just like a random moment out of nowhere. We had fourth grade together. We were in seventh grade together. We actually kind of, quote unquote, dated for a little bit in seventh grade for a total of about a month. I was, we're 12 years old and I was too afraid to hold her hand. So she broke up with me. And then the following school year, eighth grade, I moved away and we didn't have any contact with each other for about 20 years. And finally, you know, internet, Facebook, all that sort of stuff, we were able to reconnect. And, we were, friends, just kind of, reconnecting with each other. I was married at the time. She had somebody in her life. And anytime that our paths would cross, we'd get together and maybe have a dinner or something like that and just kind of catch up. Well, about a year and a half ago, she came out on my tour that I had in Ireland. And, the timing was just right. We were both single at the time. We hit it off really well. And we got together. So we were together and we decided to go visit our old hometown, and her parents still live there, so it wasn't too far out of the way. And we, were checking out our old haunts and, places that we had gone as kids. And we went back to that elementary school, which is now a performing arts center for the college. And so we're walking the grounds, peeking in windows, that sort of thing, and just really having a great time. So we end up over there at the windows of the library and we're peeking in to the place where she had kissed me on the cheek. And over the years I had asked her, what in the world was that kiss on the cheek? And she kind of shrugged her shoulders and said, I don't know. You just had this like chubby little cheek sitting out there and something told me to kiss it. So as we're over there by the windows, now adults, in our late 40s, peering in, we're pointing at the spot. There it is. There, and it's a room they've set up now for music. But we can see the spot from there. And all of a sudden, Jennifer starts calling through the window, "Kiss him, kiss him." And we thought it was funny. We're laughing and that sort of thing. But it got us thinking later on. Wait a minute here. Something in the past when we were 6 years old had told her to kiss my cheek, and she didn't know what it was, but it was, like somebody had told her to. So was it her, 48-year-old self calling out to her 6-year-old self, that intention, traversing time? And so therefore the future, 48 years old, influencing her at 6 to kiss. So then you makes you wonder, okay, which came first? Because we would call that a paradox if the one actually influenced the other. But if all time is here at concurrent, that's the way that we can interact with other moments in time and still have free will.
I absolutely love that story. Thank you for sharing that, Mike.
Thank you.
So if we can remember our past, what we call as our past memories, can we remember the future?
Oh, that's a great question. I believe that, yeah, we can tap into that. We can get glimpses of it. I believe that happens a lot of times when we sleep and we have these, premonitions or a premonitory dream where we're getting some glimpses of the future, and then, oh, it might be the next day or a week later or what have you, and all of a sudden the whole thing plays out in front of us. We're like, oh my gosh, I just had a dream about this. So in that sense, that is really remembering or getting a glimpse of the future.
So your advice, just tools and tips of the audience to tap into their future is through dreams or the sleep state.
Well, that's one way. You could also do it through meditation. And a lot of times when you meditate, you'll get different visions, and I believe that's another way to do it. And in fact, I believe real time travel will have more to do with the consciousness and meditation than, getting into some sort of time machine, or like in Back to the Future, getting into a DeLorean and
I love that
taking
show.
off. I know. No, I grew up on that. I absolutely loved it. It
Me
was
too.
fun, but I don't think it's going to be that as fun as it would be.
So we feel that we're bound by the constraints of time in our humanness. What would it look like for someone who's not bound by time constraints?
Yeah, so this would be somebody, because there are other life forms, beings, entities within those other dimensions beyond ours. And so for them, time would be like an object that they can slip in and out of. So, like with us, access to all the dimensions that are below ours, or same things for those other entities and beings that are beyond our dimension. They have free rein and access over time, so they can slip in and out of past, present, future at will. And a great example of this, I think, was in the movie Interstellar. It was a Christopher Nolan film about, I think it's just almost 10 years old now. And within that, toward the end of the movie, the main character Cooper, played by Matthew McConaughey, ends up in what they call a tesseract, which is really a three-dimensional representation of time. So he's given access to every single moment of his daughter's bedroom. He's trying to find the correct moment to be able to send a message to her. And they do it in a really interesting way. It's very abstract. All of these moments are connected together in these fibers or strings, kind of hearkening back to the idea of string theory. But this is, I think, a fairly close representation to what somebody in another dimension would see time as. But really, because we are stuck within this dimension, we're going to have a hard time really grasping
It's
what
hard.
that would look like. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a great example of that is by Michio Kaku. We were an episode of Ancient Aliens that we were in together, and we're talking about other dimensions. He gives this great example of, take a fish in a pond, and we'll say that that's, to them, a two-dimensional world. You take the fish out of the pond, and it's like another dimension to them, and that would be like 3D space, to us, lifting them out of the pond, and they get to see a whole world that they never knew existed. It would completely blow their mind, what they would see and experience being pulled out of that pond. And so I think the same thing with us. If you were to pull us out of our fourth dimensional existence into five, the fifth dimension, sixth dimension, and beyond, it would just completely completely blow our minds as to what we would actually see.
You spoke about time slips. What does that mean?
So time slips, yeah, this is the idea that two moments are resonating at the same frequency for just a moment, and the one bleeds into the other, and you really get a vision of something playing out from another point in time. And so a good example of this that I like to use is a lot of people are familiar with what we call, at least here in the States, of what we call the Conjuring House. And this is the house that the first Conjuring movie was based off of, the Perrin haunting. And really that haunting lasted for 10 years, very, very different than what they portrayed in the movie. In fact, you could probably say about 1 or 2% of the movie was actually true, and everything else was Hollywood. But but there is an actual house that is in existence still to this day, several hundred years old. And again, that haunting lasted for 10 years. The big incident wasn't an exorcism; it was a séance that had gone bad. And a couple of weeks following that, the eldest daughter, Andrea, who's a very good friend of mine, was up late at night. She was in the parlor doing homework, and her mother, Carolyn, had woken up and came out into the parlor and asked Andrea if she could, heat up some of the leftovers, which I guess was beef stew, and put on a short pot of coffee. Carolyn was really the victim of that séance that had gone bad, and she'd been kind of under the weather for a while, just didn't have a lot of energy, so she'd been sleeping a lot. And so Andrea said, very helpful. Yeah, so go ahead and do that. Take care of that. And Carolyn sits down in the parlor. And as she's sitting there, she's looking out into the dining room area. And all of a sudden, morphing into existence is this family, like out of the 1700s. There's a woman cooking over a hearth, fire raging in the fireplace. Now, this is a fireplace that at that point in time had been boarded up for the last 100 years, but all of a sudden here's this woman cooking over the fireplace. There's a couple of kids running around, and there's two gentlemen sitting at a table with pewter steins, and they turn and they look right at Carolyn, and they basically acknowledge that she's there. And the one guy kind of nudges the other and says, "Well, would you look at that?" As if Carolyn was the ghost. And then the scene kind of slowly dissipated away. So that was a moment there where, yeah, Carolyn was looking into the past, but those gentlemen from the past are looking at her into the
Incredible.
future.
Wow. So what does that say? I mean, we term it past lives. If you, I'm not sure about your thoughts about reincarnation. What does that say about multiple incarnations?
Yeah, great question. So I do believe in reincarnation, and it took me a while to kind of to reconcile that one. Okay, if I believe all time exists, if it's all concurrent,
So it's all
then how
now.
it's all now. So how do past lives come into play with that? Well, this would come into play if you also believe that our consciousness is being projected from outside of our dimension. Now, it could be projected from sixth, seventh. It could even be projected beyond our known dimensions. So, we could get into all kinds of ideas about simulated universe, or where we go when we die. Is that heaven? Is this like the home world? Where is that? It's someplace beyond. So, if our consciousness is being projected down into this world on this dimension, then yes, that would mean that our consciousness is projecting multiple lives at the same time. So, all of our past selves, our present self, and our future selves are all here right now. And when we have some of these like deja vu moments, some of those I do believe are like remnants left over from dreams, which would still be a glimpse of the future, or some fragment left over from traveling to the future while we're sleeping. But I believe some of these deja vu moments also are when we walk into a room and one of our past live selves are right there right now with us. And that's why I feel so dang familiar, because we're there at the same time in multiple lives.
Gosh, this could be like 10 episodes, but I'm trying to condense it. You
Sure.
spoke about a simulation. So are we living in a simulation?
I believe so. I don't necessarily believe it's a computer simulation. I believe it's something more organic,
There's so many
biological. It's a,
theories. I
there
yes.
really are. And, you know, it's we use the idea of a computer simulation now because it's the height of our technology. But, you know, you look at our technology, you know, 100, 150 years ago, and, you know, some of those guys, especially like Nikola Tesla, had some fantastic ideas of technology that we would have in the future, but they had no idea of how that would actually be pulled off. You know, like Tesla actually had ideas for drones, artificial intelligence, that sort of thing. And he thought it was going to be like gears and wheels and radio waves. Well, because he didn't know the silicon microchip was going to be invented, which is really what's propelling that right now. So the idea of a simulation, I don't think we have a grasp on to, we have ideas of how it would work, but we don't know the technology behind what would make it work. That said, our ancient cultures, ancient religions have been talking about a simulation for thousands of years. They just never really used that term when we talk reincarnation. It's the same idea
It's a
of
fancy
logging.
word, yes.
It is, yeah. It's the same idea as logging in and out of a computer program or logging in and out of a simulation, like a flight simulator, or even, you know, we could go down the road of computer games and what have you. You know, you're entering into a world outside of our own, generally to, you know, to learn something, whether it's flying or whether you're just interacting with some sort of environment, playing something out for a while, and then you log back out. Well, this is the same thing as like being born come into this world, living out your life, learning some lessons along the way, and then you pass away and you start the cycle over again. Even Christianity, you know, talks about that we're here right now in this world preparing for the next world, which is, you know, what you do when you interact with this simulation. You're preparing for something. So we've already seen this concept in our culture for thousands and thousands of years, just not the same word. So yeah, I do believe that we are in some sort of simulated environment, that we are accessing this world from beyond. I don't think that we have a pure grasp on how that truly functions, but I think we have some interesting ideas of how it does.
So then I guess the question is why? Why are we having this human experience?
Oh, that's the biggest question,
Yeah.
right? Why are we down here? And I think that's something that humanity's been trying to that's, that we've been trying to answer that forever. You know, what is our purpose here? You know, the larger grand scheme of it all, I don't think we really know. But that said, I think that there are some other things that we can do while we're here that are very purposeful and meaningful. You know, one, love each other; two, help each other out; and three, the knowledge that we gain while we're here, we pass that on to the next generation. Because humanity gets into these vicious cycles, and they forget lessons that they've learned. And so, if we can pass on that knowledge, then perhaps, you know, we won't enter into some of those cycles again, or maybe lessen the blow when humanity starts going down that road again. So those are some reasons I think of, you know, that we can look to as to why we're here. But that overarching, why are we playing all this out? None of us truly know.
Yeah, perfect answer. You spoke about interdimensional beings or various dimensions. What are your thoughts on extraterrestrials? It's again, it's a term, it's a name.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what we are defining as extraterrestrials right now, these can be a lot of different things. So, are they beings from another planet across the cosmos? That's one answer. I believe some of them are. I believe our governments do have material from crashes of beings that have come here. I believe some of what we are witnessing or experiencing as extraterrestrials are some sort of interdimensional being that has, and that could still be traversing the cosmos using the dimensional space to come here. But you know, some of these seem to live within those other dimensions. And when people have some of these like time loss events where they're abducted or they don't know where the time went, I think a lot of those time loss incidents are they're being pulled into another dimensional space. So maybe this is a being that is from the fifth, sixth, or seventh dimension and pulls them into there, which time is going to work very differently in dimensions that are outside of time. So I think that's why some of this time loss is happening. And we even see, like, in our history, some of these legends and lore from the past that, you know, like fairy lore and things like this are very, very similar to what we're calling, you know, aliens and extraterrestrial encounters now. It's just we've attributed to a different type of being. So is it maybe the same phenomenon? And we have a more modern context to it now. It's possible. And some of them can also be time travelers. They could be human time travelers, you know, some sort of UFO or UAP, or, you know, they could be, you know, another life form that has evolved millions or billions of years from now that has also developed that type of technology and has come back in time.
Gosh, I love this subject. I was going to ask you another question, but you mentioned time travelers. What's that about?
The ability to move in and out of time. I've already said that I think it's going to be more consciousness related than a machine. It doesn't completely rule out the idea of machines. I think right now, humans could, you know, use their consciousness to move to another point in time. So, yeah, the idea of being able to, if I've talked, you know, energy, frequency, vibration, and, you know, time slips being two of those moments resonate the same frequency for a moment. Well, imagine if you could control that, if you could control that frequency and hold on to that so that you could experience a more prolonged moment or even spend a couple days in that location. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour.
I haven't, but I should watch it.
You should. Yeah, it's fantastic. And the premise is basically he falls in love with this image of a woman, discovers that it was this old lady that had given him a pocket watch when she was much younger. She was, you know, the very beautiful Jane Seymour. And so he wants to go visit her back in 1912. And he essentially tricks himself into believing it's 1912. So he's at the hotel where she's supposed to, you know, be at back in that year, moves out all the modern amenities. He gets dressed up as somebody from that era, gives him, gets old money, old coins from that era. And so he basically tricks himself, or wills his consciousness really to that other moment in time. And so, you know, I believe that's more of what it's going to be. Again, it's a fictional story, but Richard Matheson, the writer, his research for that book, and he actually, in the written novel for this, he had actually referenced when he has his character Richard go to the library, he actually references his material that he had researched. So like the book Man in Time by J.B. Priestley and several others that are the basis of his research on the nature of time. So this isn't just, you know, something that's just a real fanciful notion of his. He had actually studied the concepts and the nature of time and incorporated that into his book. So I think it's going to have more to do with consciousness and being able to control that, you know, frequency and resonance and vibration to be able to experience more of these prolonged time travel type moments.
Thanks, Mike. I'm digressing here. I just wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on parallel lives? People talk about, for example, there's multiple versions or infinite versions of Louisa living now based on the choices and decisions I make.
Yeah. I have a bit of a hard time with every decision making, you know, spawning off or branching out to another parallel life. That we would have infinite ones branching out every single day. Like right now, me deciding to take a sip of coffee.
Yeah, or having this interview.
Yeah, That apparently would spawn off a whole other universe. I have a hard time with that. So some people in that argument have said, well, some of the major decisions, getting married or
Divorce, but yes,
divorce.
not putting butter on your toast.
Right, exactly. But then it's like, okay, well, if that's true, then who sets the rules for what's a significant decision and what's not? And sometimes what might be an insignificant decision for one person turns out to be very significant for another. Like, let's just say, I'm crossing the street. Pretty insignificant decision for me. But let's say there was a person that was about to turn as I'm crossing the street, and they have to stop for me, which changes the time that they're going to enter into an intersection down the road somewhere. And because of that little bit of difference in time, they end up in an accident down that road. That ends up being very, very significant for that person, even though the decision for me was insignificant. So how did those rules really work? That's why I have a hard time with that one right now. But that doesn't mean to say that there aren't other universes out there. Theoretical physics actually say that there are other physical universes out there that have different physics applied to them, different chemical makeup, and we are one of many that are out there. So, they are going to have different galaxies, different planets, that sort of thing, totally different physical universe. But there's also the research that has come out here recently from the ANITA project and the Ice Cube project down in Antarctica. And they're down there doing neutrino research, and they just released a really fascinating image of our solar system based on the neutrinos that they are detecting down there. And basically, those are particles that are coming in from space that are supposed to have basically data about our solar system and galaxy and beyond. And so that's kind of the crux of their research down there. However, while they're doing that research, they suddenly started detecting neutrinos that were running in reverse, coming out of the Earth without a source, which was absolutely bizarre to them. So, of course, they started studying that too. And the paper that they released almost 2 years ago, and these are the scientists saying this, that the behavior of these neutrinos, coming up out of the Earth without a source, were indicative of a parallel universe running in reverse time.
Oh my gosh, what does that mean in
Yeah,
simple
exactly.
terms?
Yeah, what does that look like? And just kind of thinking about that, well, okay, parallel universe running in reverse time. So if we have one universe running forward or one universe running backward, which one are we? Because we would presume we're the one running, forward, but that might not be the case. We might actually be running backward and don't realize it. So this is actually indicative to me of duality. When we talk about the Hermetic tradition, as above, so below, you look at the symbolism of the yin and the yang, that sort of thing. It's just that sent me down a whole rabbit hole of, okay, how does our ancient symbolism relate to this sort of thing? Parallel universes running in reverse time. So I started looking at one of the other symbols I started looking at was the Ouroboros, the snake eating its own tail, the symbol of constant recycle and renewal. If you look closely at that, especially the particular illustration, the 1400s by Theodorus Pelicanus, you see two colors in that tract, red and green. And so if we liken that to the two parallel universes, say the green is running forward and the red is running backward, it means the beginning of one is the end of the other, and the end of one is the beginning of the other. So you're talking here, alpha and omega, the beginning and the end, where they meet, where they converge, that beginning point, or again, the end for the other, I believe is shown to us in that symbol of the Ouroboros, where the mouth of the snake is actually eating the tail. And that's actually the Big Bang. So for one universe, it's going to be the apocalypse, right? But for the other one, it's going to be the beginning of the universe, what we've been calling the Big Bang. So when one ends, the other begins. So when people start asking what was before our universe, the universe, what comes after our universe, the universe, because it's all recycling.
A continuous cycle.
It's a continuous
cycle. People ask about the future, what's going to happen? And it's just one continuous cycle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Fascinating. Like such a, so fascinating. You speak about portals to other dimensions or perhaps past lives. Well, we'll term the past lives just so it's a common term. What are these?
Yeah, so portals are really just a gateway or a tunnel to somewhere else. Could be another place in the universe, could be another place on Earth, could be to another dimension, could be to another point in time. NASA has admitted that we have portals right outside of our planet. Now, these are, they call them X points, but they say, yes, they are a type of portal. And what they do, and they've been studying this for 10 years, but it's where the Earth's magnetic shield meets up against the solar wind. And as these portals open and close, they allow more of the protons and electrons from the solar wind to enter into Earth's magnetic sphere, and then we get more brilliant auroras and things like that. Now, in their studies, or because they sent up satellites, there's like almost no rhyme or reason to how often they open, how big they open. It's really kind of all over the place. So there's no pattern. And as humans, we like patterns so that we can try to make sense of what's going on. So it's something that we haven't been able to really control. But those are a type of portal. In other senses of where we see portals, a lot of the research that I've done in ancient Egypt, there are several locations that are actually designated by the ancient Egyptians as Stargate areas. So this would be the idea of utilizing some sort of portal or wormhole to, again, maybe go to somewhere else in the cosmos, go to somewhere else here on Earth. Is that why some of these pyramidal structures between South America and Egypt are so similar? Maybe. But then you also have to take into consideration, okay, we're also talking about, entering into altered states of consciousness. Are we talking into, time travel and these sorts of things? That's on the table too.
And I know you have a retreat coming up in Egypt next year.
Yeah, April 16th to 28th. So if anybody would like to join us, Stargates of Ancient Egypt 2 is the name of the tour.
And I will leave a link below in the show notes. Where's the best place for people to contact you?
Best place for that, just go to my website, mikericksecker.com, and I have the links in the events and tour section that can take people right to that registration page.
So now what do physicists say about the possibility of time travel?
So our theoretical physicists, when it comes to time travel, it's interesting because they've been kind of all over the place with this for many years. So right now, what they say about time travel is that, well, we could, sure, build a machine, but then we'd have to harness the entire power of the sun into this machine, which of course would annihilate our planet. So we can't do that. Or we could use a black hole, because a black hole bends space and time. If we were to slingshot around the black hole and wind up back at Earth, then the person that had made that travel would end up back at Earth at a very bizarre point in time. A couple problems with that. You get too close to a black hole and you pass across the event horizon, you're gone. But even if you don't, the gravity is so strong there that it would stretch you into, they call it spaghettification. So it would essentially stretch out the craft that you're in and your body like a long string of spaghetti, which would pretty much kill you. So so these ideas aren't really feasible. physicists back in the 80s had this debate as well. And there was a Russian physicist, Novikov. He came up with this self-consistency principle for time travel, which basically said that, you know, theoretically time travel is possible, but you couldn't ever change anything because if you were to change something, the using math, the math wouldn't eventually equate out to zero. You know, you can't have a remainder hanging out there, which changing something in the past would do. So he said, yeah, it's not really going to happen. So then you had a couple of other physicists, Kip Thorne and Joel Palchinski, debating this back and forth. And there's a paradox out there called Palchinski's paradox, where he said, well, if we use an Einstein-Rosen bridge, which is really the basis for a wormhole, the idea that you could bend space and time and connect two very, very distant points using that wormhole or bridge. If you shoot a billiard ball through a Einstein-Rosen bridge and you had the other end of that that wormhole come out and hit that billiard ball just before it entered into the wormhole to begin with, then you would have a moment here in which he's basically creating a paradox, like all the Palchinski paradox, but basically saying that you would be changing the past, with something from the future in that case, which is really very, very similar to what we call the grandfather paradox, and we see play out in Back to the Future and in a lot of other movies, which always made me laugh because physicists kind of dismiss the idea of some things like the grandfather paradox and when they play out in pop culture. But yet this one was acceptable because instead of talking about dead grandfathers and in sci-fi movies, this was we're physicists and we're talking about wormholes and billiard balls. It's really the same type of concept. So to answer your question, which I kind of did in a long-winded fashion, a lot of physicists do believe that time travel is possible, but I don't think they've been able to wrap their heads around how exactly it would work. Because I think in a lot of cases, yeah, they get way too wrapped up in all the math behind it. And I think it's more of a philosophical question.
I agree. It just reminded me when you're talking about time travel. Have you seen Doctor Who? I used to watch that.
The TARDIS.
I used to love that show.
Yeah. My kids watch a lot of Doctor Who.
It's very old now, yeah, right? I've got two more. No?
Yes. It's been around for a long, long time. So there's a lot of old Doctor Who, but there's a more modern version of it too.
Oh, I haven't seen the modern one. Two more questions. Mm-hmm. I guess after speaking about the complexities of time travel, is probably the best way, if I'm explaining to the audience, or the possibilities through our consciousness, not necessarily going in a space machine, but mm-hmm. through our consciousness to time travel. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's the more practical way to do it, to be able to, rather than step into a machine, will our consciousness to another point in time, whether that's the past or into the future, because I believe that our consciousness already does that. I mean, I've talked about time slips, here and there, and I've also talked a bit about, our dreams and when we're sleeping that, basically our consciousness is visiting these other moments in time. And so, I think that is more of what it's going to be rather than a machine. Now, will we eventually be able to make a machine to do it? Maybe. And maybe that's what some of these UFOs may actually be. Some of these may actually be time travelers. But I think for the time being, our best way to be able to time travel would be with the consciousness. And I think that's the way you're
mm. you're and through really intention, really. I mean, you spoke about dreams or perhaps quiet time or meditation, but really through conscious intention, perhaps.
Correct.
One more question. What makes you so passionate about this concept of time and time travel?
It's something that I've always really enjoyed the concept. Oh, I enjoy trying to figure out the inner workings of the universe. When I first started writing, I've been writing since I was like in second grade. I wrote little mystery stories, and even my first book that I ever published as an adult was actually a mystery novel. These ideas of how time works, how the universe works, how all of this unusual phenomena works, how our consciousness works, what's beyond, in other dimensions. These are like the biggest mysteries of the universe, and so that really drives me. That's a passion. And in time specifically, I'll go back to the movie Somewhere in Time. I saw that when I was a kid, multiple times, and I just was always fascinated with the idea of how he was able to will himself from one point to another. And just something struck me like, that's really the way it's going to be, real time
I'm going to
travel.
watch it. And again, it goes back to conscious intention, like
Absolutely.
anything in this humanness that we're living. Mike Ricksucker, I've loved having you on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the Passion Harvest audience that I haven't asked you?
Luis, I really just want to thank you for having me on the show today. People can find me mikericksecker.com. I also have a community that I've put together at what I call the Connected Universe Portal. That idea that we are all connected to each other, to the planet, and of course to the universe. And so it's a group of like-minded people that have come together to discuss a lot of these topics. I have a ton of content out there, and that's connectedUniversePortal.com.
And I will leave a link below in the show notes.
Thank you.
Mike, thank you so much for being on Passion Harvest. I've loved it. It's one of my favorite subjects. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. If you like this episode, please do subscribe.